And you need to allow people, you need to give them the opportunity to fall in love with you. Because they will. If you show them your authentic self, it's refreshing, they will love you for it. If you can get over your own fears about it. And I guess I'm just lucky that I never really had that like fear of like, what will people think? I'm just like, fuck it, this is me, let's do it.
The voice you just heard is Elizabeth Hoody, aka the Peach Fuzz. Elizabeth is a loudmouth illustrator and crafty little bitch trying to make socialist business practices and resource sharing the new norm. In this episode, you'll learn the easiest way to get started selling your products online, why you need to talk about more than just your work on social media, what collaborating can do for your creative business, how teaching others can be the key to growth, and so much more. Now, if you're ready, let's start the episode and talk to Elizabeth. Okay, well, welcome to the show, Elizabeth. I am so excited to talk to you. In the introduction, everybody will have heard a little bit about what you do now and what you are up to, but I would love to hear a little bit, before we get started and get stuck into that, about how you got to where you are now. So, I would love to hear a little bit about where you started. So have you always been a creative?
Yeah, I've always been very crafty. I come from a long line of very crafty women, and that was always very like fostered in our home and stuff. So I'm very grateful for that. I went to college for accounting though, because I was like, creating is fun and cool, but I want to be able to have nice things and pay the bills and stuff. I had no idea. And my mom was like, please go to art school. Like, I had the opposite of what a lot of like artists experience, where their parents are like, no, go to med school or whatever.
Yeah.
But I am really glad that I went to school for accounting, because it's like given me such a good foundation to understand the business and like the causes that I care about, and how messed up like the tax system is, and how, you know, I even saw that when I would do tax accounting for high net worth people, and like they would donate $5 to the Pigeon Society out of their like multi-million dollar income. And I'm like, okay, these are not the people who are going to save us at all. But I started the brand in 2016 after Donald Trump was elected, and I had just graduated from college, so I, of course, had no money, but I was like, Planned Parenthood is going to need us extra, so what if I do some art drawing while I'm studying for my CPA exams to kind of balance out that? And I just uploaded it to Redbubble and, like, promoted it. So I didn't have any inventory or like risk really. Then I just donated all that money to causes that I cared about. And that kind of just continued to grow. And then I got laid off when the pandemic hit. They were very clear though that I would have been laid off with or without a pandemic. And I was like, you didn't need to say that.
Yeah. <That's>
hurtful. Yeah. That whole job was very hurtful. I'm still like, you know, corporate America does some trauma to you. But yeah, I kind of just like kept hustling since then. It was a good excuse to dive headfirst into my work. And like a year afterwards, I was taking this full time.
Wow. That's incredible. I mean, yeah, sometimes the situations just force us to make those big leaps, which is sometimes not ideal, but
I'm so glad that I was fired.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I started my business out of a similar situation. I wasn't fired, I quit because my job was toxic and awful, but it forced me to kind of do a similar thing. I was like, well, I gotta figure this out. I'm just gonna have to either make this work or it's gonna fail and I'm gonna have to find something else. And so it's incredible that you did that, and that after a year you managed to do that full time. That's amazing. Is there anything that you think helped you to make it like work in that year to get you to full time so quickly? Because that's, you know, some people it takes a long time to get to full time, but to do it in a year is pretty impressive.
I mean, it was technically like 4 or 5 years since I'd started. So I had that going for me. I would go into work early when I was at my tax accounting job and like fulfill Etsy orders with mm-hmm. their envelopes and printing things off at the company printer and stuff like that. Yeah. But I think I really got hit with like the perfect storm of things during the pandemic. Like, first of all, people had that Panini money. They were spending mm-hmm. a little bit extra, and people really cared about small business and supporting that. So that was helpful. And what I was already making art about, which was like social causes, social justice stuff, anti-racism, anti-homophobia, queer rights and stuff, was like extremely trendy, I guess I could say, mm-hmm. At the time. So it was kind of just this perfect storm of things that all fell into place to make me perfectly lined up for this. And I think also the fact that I had done like a slow incline was really helpful. Like, I never took out any loans for the business. By the time mm-hmm. I quit my second full-time job, the Peach Fuzz was making me the same amount of money as I was making on my W-2. So that was when I was like, I also like couldn't breathe. I have anxiety induced asthma. So that was like the point for me where I was like, I can't continue like this. My body is shutting down. Mm-hmm. And I just took the leap while I was still on my parents' insurance. And yeah, the rest is history. I made sure that it was like a very smooth off ramp or on ramp, whatever, for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And you said that you started doing this with Redbubble, which mm-hmm. you mentioned has like no overheads, you're not storing any stock, like that sort of thing kind of, I assume, makes things a little bit easier. Absolutely. What are your thoughts on that and on like using that to get started versus, you know, I can see you've got a lot of stock behind you right yeah. now, so I assume you're not doing that right now. So tell me a little bit about using kind of those sorts of platforms, because I assume, you know, some artists who are wanting to get started or are thinking about using something like that, or Society 6, I think, is a similar yeah. one. So tell me about your thoughts about that and how that worked and how you thought about that and then trends, you know, changing from that.
I definitely think that they're not as prevalent now as they were back then. Mm-hmm. You know, Redbubble in particular kind of went, I don't know, they just have so much stuff on there and so much, like, people make jokes about how, like, everything on there is ripped off and stuff like that. So they were kind of mm-hmm. known for that for a while, which I think tanked their popularity. But, like I said, like, I had no risk. You only make, like, 10% on each sale, which is not much, but for no work other than marketing it on my behalf, that's pretty sweet. And even now, I've just kept my stuff up there, and I, without touching it, without doing anything, I get a payment for like $200 to $300 every month, mm-hmm. which, as artists, there's not a whole lot we can do that make us passive income, and that is one of them. So I always recommend people do it. I'm on Redbubble, TeePublic, and Threadless. Mm-hmm. I like TeePublic the most, even though I make the least money there, just mm-hmm. because the people that work there, like the artist management team or whatever, is super great. Like, they always pay me for my feedback if they do calls with me, which is very rare, I feel like, in this field, and always want to promote me in emails and stuff. So it's good that I've fostered that relationship with them, because now they're like willing to go up to bat for me at every turn. I know that some people, and even myself, I was very precious about my art at a certain point where I was like, oh, I don't want to put everything I have up there because it'll detract them from buying on my website. The people who are shopping on Redbubble are totally different people than are going to shop on your independent website. Yeah. So you might as well just put everything up there, because also you don't know what people are going to want. And additionally, I love having my stuff up there because everybody always is like, oh, well, can you make this on a purple V-neck, or can you make this on a yellow turtle? Like, no, I cannot. But you can go buy it from this yeah. other platform, and I don't have to do anything for it, because, sorry, I'm not ever going to stock V-necks in the shop.
Yeah. Or like a random pillow, or like a clock.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I think that's a smart approach, especially as you said, to have, some kind of passive income. It's a relatively easy ask. Like, there's an upfront work, obviously, to upload your stuff to there and to get it all set up. But once that's done, there's not much upkeep, I assume, to
No.
have it up there. Maybe you're adding stuff periodically to get your new stuff up there, but once
Yeah, and
that's
like
done,
marketing
it's
it, but like it's also really good for starting out because you can gauge what is popular. Like, that's how I figured out the first like 10 stickers that I wanted to carry in my own Etsy shop was it was the ones that were the top sellers on Redbubble. So I wasn't just like stuck with a bunch of inventory again. It's all about inventory management. And like, this business, I flourished when I was in a one bedroom SF apartment. And now I take up the entire ground floor of our house. So we've kind of exploded a bit. But yeah, those platforms are great for like the interim.
That's really smart to use it as like a testing to figure out what's going to work. I love that. Obviously you have expanded a lot now, and you are doing a lot of different products. You have stickers, you've got your amazing like claw clips, which are incredible. Yes, look
Thanks.
at that little guy. Okay, so obviously, with something like that, with a claw clip, I was so curious, and I'm sure a lot of artists would be curious. When you're creating something like that, that I assume not many, if any, people have created that before from scratch, what does the process look like to create a new product like that? Like,
Like hair
with
claws or just in general?
I guess in general, but also hair claws specifically, I guess, because like with a sticker, you can go and just Google like, how do I make a sticker, right? Or like, how do I produce a sticker? With something new, like a claw clip, it's like, where do you start with creating something brand new that is quite rare or that nobody's ever done before? Yeah, tell me about
Well, the
that.
good thing with like hair claws is I don't have to have like a CAD for them. I think there's like if you were asking me how would you make a 3D sample of something that's never been made before? I have no idea. I don't even know where to start. But like I reached out to people that were already making hair claws and I started with like just the rhinestone letter ones that just like said Bimbo on it or something. And then expanded from there. And it's actually like illustration work translates really well to hair claws as long as you can simplify the design and find acetate colors that match it. I think like in terms of my overall process, I have a page on in my Notion called like idea dump, and I have it broken down by like just like jumping off points, necklace ideas, revamps of current products I already have, or hair claws. And so I go off of that list, just based off of like whatever I feel most excited about, whatever I think I need to get a move on before someone else does it now. And I just go from there. And I actually didn't even order samples when I did my first hair claws, which is crazy to think about now. I was just like, yeah, it'll probably be fine. I don't care. Like, it's fine. And thank God, like, my hot dog ones turned out fine. But there's many that I've gotten since then, just samples of that I'm like, oh my God, thank you for not letting me just do a full run of that, because the what it was in my brain is not what it looked like on paper.
It's such a interesting process, and I love that you share that as well. Like, I've seen, share the sample and being like, this is what's different, this is what I'm going to change. And I think that's such a cool thing for like your audience to see and to be able to see, like, oh, I can't wait to see the last, like, the actual final result. So what is, I guess, like, as well as that, like, tell me a little bit about your approach to social media in general, because obviously you have a quite a large audience now on social media. So tell me a bit about what you think has worked for you, what your approach has been to socials. Tell me a bit about that.
My approach is definitely showing up as authentically as I can. that was a real problem for me when I worked in the corporate world. Like, there's no work Elizabeth and home Elizabeth. Like, I don't know how to turn things on and off. I am mm-hmm. just, like, the same person all the time. I'm an oversharer. And, yeah. like, I had been taught that that was a really bad thing for a very long time. And I didn't really understand, because those, like, the moments of vulnerability are when I felt the most connected to people in my life, whether they be strangers or best friends or whatever. Like, being able to realize, like, oh, I'm not the only one that feels this way. And, like, I'm not broken or crazy for having these thoughts. Like, other people have them, too. They're just not talking about them.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember doing that, like, little by little on the on my Instagram, just to kind of test the waters with things like, you know, I identify as a queer pansexual woman, but I am married to a man. And that comes with a whole lot of, I don't know if you can say imposter syndrome or like, yeah. you know, just a lot of gaslighting yourself mm-hmm. and talking about that instead of being like, oh, I don't want people to know that about me or like whatever. Talking about it and connecting with other people that are at whatever point in that journey for themselves, like whether they just figuring out that they're queer, but they've only dated men before and are like, what does that mean for me? Or if they've moved past their own internalized homophobia and like have words of wisdom that they can impart to me. It's just been so healing and like fostered such a strong, supportive community that I don't think I would ever like stop doing that. And I had different approaches in social media before. Like, I used to do rage baiting. I used to, since I was so political, I would, like, tag, like, Trump 2020 and things like that in my captions to get all the crazies to see it and fight with each other. And then that's tons of engagement. And that is so bad for your mental health.
Yeah.
Like, I was just at a 10 all the time of stress. And I even see now how that has still impacted like the way that I expect people to perceive me in like a negative light. But since I made that switch to being like, okay, instead of talking about why we disagree, let's talk about things that like nobody's talking about. Let's talk about money. Let's talk about like how much I'm actually making as an artist and stuff. I have such a more supportive and like down to fight for me community now that I would never go back to the rage baiting. And like I do every now and then just for shits and giggles, but it's just so much nicer to be able to be a part of other people's journeys in that way. And people want to help people who help them. That is like the best move I made financially for my business was sharing trade secrets, you know? I have so many people who like on one end will like download my free templates and tip me $3. Love that. All the way to people who buy every gift for all of their best friends and are putting together like bridesmaid proposal boxes with things exclusively from my store because I helped their business. So like it really does come back around for you.
Yeah, for sure. I think, one of the things that I think a lot of artists worry about and that I talk to a lot of people about is that, like, I can only talk about my art. Like, I have to just share my art and that's, like, I have to niche down and be really specific and only share my art. But I think you're, like, a great example of that. Like, no, you can talk about, like, yeah, I can talk about the money that I make. I can talk about who I am as a person. I can talk about like, so many other things. And that is what helps you connect with other people, right? Like, yes, they care about your art and they love your art and they want to see that, but they also care about you as a person. And that's what's going to get them to be like, oh, that person is an interesting person. That person is somebody who has the same beliefs as me. That's somebody I want to support. That's somebody who, I want to buy from because that's a person that's not just a shop. It's a real life person and somebody I want to connect with. So it's worth being more than just a faceless brand, more than just your product.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I do coaching now, mm-hmm. and that's like the number one thing I tell people is like people want to follow a founder account. They don't want to follow a brand account.
Mm.
And you need to allow people, you need to give them the opportunity to fall in love with you. Mm. Because they will. If you show them your authentic self, it's refreshing. They will love you for it if you can get over your own fears about it. And I guess I'm just lucky that I never really had that like fear of like, what will people think? I'm just like, fuck it, this is me, let's do it.
Yeah, take it or leave it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, one
but
of the
still questions... will cry if you don't like it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, one of the things I wanted to talk about is what you just mentioned, is that now you have started like teaching people, coaching people, sharing what you know, sharing the resources that you use so that they can use it too. So when did you start doing that, and how did you kind of know that it was the right time to start doing that, or time to start adding that into your business and adding these other services and things in?
I don't remember when I started in the business, but I do know that like I remember all the way back to high school, I would be making study guides and like sharing them with my friends, or yeah. even in my tax accounting job, I would make different like Excel templates that I could share with other people in the office, because I was like, why are we doing this like one off every time when we could just have one that we all share with each other? I'm very like, how can we make this more efficient, mm-hmm. and how can we say fuck it to like the way things have always been?
Yeah.
And I also like am very proud of the things that I put out, and I want people to see them, to like it, and to be able to utilize it themselves, because I'm not like, obviously I'm not sharing the things that I think are garbage of mine. Like those stay yeah. in the personal Excel sheets.
Yeah.
But I've just always liked sharing these things and helping my peers and friends and stuff like that. I was always really good in school, so that was a way that I got people to like me. Was being like the smart one that would help them understand what they did wrong on the exam and stuff, and I just found it very valuable, so kind of just continuing that on now. And I do distinctly remember I saw a reel from someone saying how gross, rude, and disrespectful it is to ask somebody where they get their supplies, and I'm like, that is so not cute. Like, every person, you can decide how close to your chest you keep things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even things like, I don't share my hair claw manufacturer anymore because I've had too many icky situations where like it's taking 10 times longer now, or somebody has a design that's like very similar to mine. I'm like, I was going to do that. What are mm-hmm. you doing? But like on the whole, I think it's also helped me combat this sort of like deeply ingrained capitalist mindset of like, I have to hold on to my portion of the pie, and if anybody else is successful, that's going to take away from me. I have enough confidence, and this also kind of determines that of like, my stuff is already going to be unique and special and serve a purpose, that like someone else could make something similar, I guess. Like, if they make another sticker that's high quality, it's not going to keep people from buying my stickers because I still have my art. And I'm not, like, worried about somebody taking that from me. And sometimes I am. Sometimes I get very, like, you know, the green monster of envy comes out. And I think that this was just a way for me to go completely in the opposite direction to kind of combat that within me also. To be like, no, these are, we're not gatekeeping. These are my community, not my competition. I'm going to share with them and just trust that the universe will bring these positive things back to me. And it clearly has.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, you're obviously like the templates that you share, like all of this stuff is helping all these artists, but it's clearly you're still getting sales and you're still getting all these people coming to you for help and all of that stuff.
Right.
So it's clearly working for sure. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And so how do you now find that you have added this stuff into your business? How do you now find balancing that side of things with creating, still creating your own work and your own products and everything?
I definitely have to keep things in perspective. Something that I've done that's really helped me is I made a little bio of my ideal customer. And, like, obviously, my ideal customer is a fellow business owner. But not everybody is going to be like that. So, like, that part of it, I'm like, they care about shopping small. They might not have a small business, but they care about that. So, kind of pivoting that way. And also listening to my community and asking them, like, what do you want to see more of? Because that's, you know, less ideas I have to come up with on my own when they tell me. Or if I, like, I just uploaded the other day a lead time tracker because I finally made one for myself. And it has been a game changer, like, absolutely changed my life. So I'm like, listen up, everybody needs to be on this shit right now. Yeah. So I was just like, okay, I'll just take all my numbers out and share it for people to use. And if they hate it, cool. If they love it and it changes their life, then we have fewer people reordering things that they already ordered and, like, less waste also. Mm-hmm. Like, I know people waste a lot of supplies trying to find the perfect sticker manufacturer, the perfect, you know, clay producer or whatever. And, like, I don't want shitty samples out in the world just as a whole. Like, mm-hmm. not personally, but just, like, I don't want their... If we can have everybody's stuff be high quality, nice, and, like, long-lasting, mm-hmm. then that's better for everybody and the environment, ideally.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so how's the lead time tracker gone?
Good. It's been rough though, because in February, all of the manufacturers shut down for the entire month for Chinese New Year.
Oh.
So my lead time tracker is a little wrecked right now because things that normally took like 20 days are now taking 80 days. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a big difference. Mm-hmm. So hopefully it levels back out after that, but it's been nice for, especially when wholesale accounts come to me and say, hey, I know you're out of stock of this. Like, any idea when it's going to come back? And I can at least give them a vague idea of it now.
Instead
of just being like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's a great idea. Yeah, I love that. Okay, so I think I love that. And I think that in terms of balancing that and talking to your audience and making sure that you're still, staying in touch with them is so important. And obviously, like, you know, I'm a brand strategist, I'm all about knowing your audience and all of that, and I love that.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, like, any other sort of what I would call brand strategy things, have you done any other work on your brand in terms of, like, your vision, your values, your mission, like, throughout the years? How much branding work have you done?
I haven't done a whole lot because that's, like, not where my expertise is at all. Like, you know, I have like 3 or 4 different versions of my logo because I don't know how to make a logo, and like this one works sometimes. I guess I don't know. This year I made like the biggest switch I made. So I started, like I said, the company because I wanted to raise money for nonprofits and stuff like that. And it used to be like, okay, anything that said abortion on it would be donated to abortion funds. But then I found that as the business was growing, the donations were not also growing because those products maybe just like were not as popular as the other things that I was putting out for whatever reason. And like, I couldn't really figure out how to do like a hair claw that made sense to be a charitable thing. I did like a drag boot one that went to the ACLU Drag Defense Fund, but it's also super annoying to have to keep track of and, like, do that calculation to figure out how much of this sold and how much did I spend on it, and let's take that out. So now this year, I'm still doing, like, 100% of those products that are relevant to charities are going to be donated, but also an additional percent or additional amount that brings me up to 10% of sales is what I'm donating. And that has felt really good because we've already donated $13,000 this year, which is nuts. We're three, four months into the year. So that has felt really good to like return to that part of the business and like get back to our roots and stuff. Mm-hmm. And also, I think that I kind of fell out of doing more political art for a while. And then I had a couple people respond to like, you know, I think pro-Palestinian art that I put up saying like, oh, I followed this account, but I don't like that you're getting into politics. And I'm like, mama, this account has always been political. Yeah. I am clearly not being loud enough about it. So I'm trying to like lean into that a little bit further.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I don't know that there's been like any huge developments. I think now it's also, I'm more of like leaning into niche items and working on trusting my own opinion of what is cool or funny or worth making. Because things that I thought were cool and worth making, you know, 3 years ago that maybe flopped, if I remade it now with 100,000 followers, would not be flopping. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of about revisiting those things that the algorithm or the sales at the time told me were bad ideas, and now retrying it because people love when you speak their very specific niche language.
Yeah.
And I love delivering that for them.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I just, my partner and I go to a lot of like markets around here, around where we live, and we went to one and this one artist had this one sticker that was about a very specific meme that only he, like, he understood this meme and he spent like 5 minutes explaining it to me, but he loved it. And he was like,
yeah,
it's just this one specific meme that is so funny to him. And I was like, yeah, okay, great. But he was so happy.
Yeah.
So like, if you can find the products that speak to those people and their specific
love. And they will be diehard for you then, because they're like, oh, these are my people.
Yeah.
Like, they get it.
yeah, exactly. So do you have any, I guess, like, tips or advice for if you are trying to, I guess, try to trust your instincts or the things that you love, or, you know, you said you're trying to do that a bit more. How are you trying to do that, I guess?
I think just having, like, blind aggressive delusion is a very important part of the business.
Yeah.
I get asked a lot, like, how did you have the confidence in your work to, like, go after it? And I can't remember a time where I didn't think, like, oh, this, what I made right here, this is fucking funny. Like, this is good. I've always thought of myself as, like, a very funny person.
Yeah.
And even when I was, like, socially insecure or insecure for whatever other reason, I still thought that these things were good ideas, and it wasn't a matter of if they gained popularity, but when. And I was like, I know that it's just, all it takes is one influencer or one brand to pick it up and share it to their millions of followers for you to take off, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was not going to let that, like, me waiting for that luck to fall upon me, keep me from continuing to create things that I knew would get me there eventually. And kind of just believing, like, having that blind delusion of, like, it's not if, it's when. And I heard someone talking about it the other day. They're like, it's like you've placed an order for something and you're just waiting for it to arrive. And you can do other things in the meantime, but it was never like, oh, I don't know. If it works out, then it does. It was always just like, okay, how can I increase my chances of getting this in front of the right eyeballs? And now I still struggle with that, but I have to tell myself, like, it's not you, it's the algorithm.
Yes. Yeah. You mentioned, like, you know, it might, you hope that maybe like an influencer will pick it up, or you want to try and get it in front of the right eyeballs. I did notice you just recently did a collab with the Shitty Craft Club, which she's amazing.
Love.
Yeah, incredible. Put Diamantes on everything. Incredible. Are you doing things like that, like trying to collaborate with other crafty people or other influencers? Tell me about things like that you're trying, that you're to try and get your things in front of other people.
Yeah. So in the past, something that I did that, like, I think really targeted my correct market was sending things to the P.O. box of Hassan Piker. He's like a pretty prevalent political Twitch streamer. Because somebody else had sent him my Abolish ICE shirt in his P.O. box. And I got a ton of orders on Etsy for it that day from men, which like 87% of my demographic is women. So I was like, where are they coming from? It's either something really, really good or something really, really bad is happening. And so I just like asked them, I was like, where are you guys coming from? And they're like, oh, this Twitch streamer opened it up on stream and we all love it. So then I sent him $70 worth of product, I think, and made $3,000 in a weekend because of... He has like 30,000 concurrent viewers in, at any given time. So, and viewers that I know have the same politics as me. So that was one thing. And then, like working with Sam of Shitty Craft Club, we've been friends for a while. And I had this idea for the necklace. I wanted to do a charm necklace. And I was like, this would be a great opportunity to work together. And I know that our audiences would probably, like, mesh very well. And I have, I kind of shied away from doing more giveaways because I just find that I don't, it's, like, the payout for me is not great. I did one with, like, Kim Chi Cosmetics, who has, like, I mean, Kim Chi has, like, 1.5 million followers. And I think I gained 80 followers from that. So I was But, like, with Sam, I gained 800 followers the first day because our audiences were different enough, but, like, we have so much crossover that it brought new people versus, like, oh, I already follow all three of you that are doing this giveaway or whatever. So I'm trying to now find other people that I think are in that, like, we share similar values, but I don't think that there's crossover, like, huge crossover in our audiences. Or just people that, like, I love their stuff and I think it'd be fun to work together. It's also a great way if someone has, like, artwork that you really like and you're like, so if we work together, can we use this piece that you already made and put it on a different product together? And also, I just recommend collabs to people because you're splitting inventory quantities. So you all automatically have a lower per unit cost, which is going to be super helpful. You're splitting the marketing work. You're splitting the art work, you know? So it just, like, makes sense to do.
I am the same. I'm like, people are always, you know, get stuck with social media and their growth. And it's like, they're kind of just waiting for people to come to them or hoping that the algorithm is going to work for them. But when you collaborate with someone else, it's like you are accessing this whole other audience that maybe like 80% of them might have never heard of you before. And so that is such a powerful way to be like, hello. Nice to meet you. So I think collaborations are such a smart way in any way you do them, whether it's a giveaway or like you said, like sending your stuff to them so that you can hopefully get in front of their audience or whatever way you do them, is a really smart marketing tool. So I think that's very clever.
And like for Pride this year, I was supposed to have a bunch of stuff in a big box store and they pulled basically everything. So I was like, okay, corporate Pride is letting us down yet again. I was not surprised. So to kind of counter that and make it feel better for myself, I'm going to collaborate with other queer brands and artists that I know and love so that I can still have this like wide reach, but with having that money stay in the community instead of to a bunch of fucking bigoted CEOs and stuff.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great idea and a great way to take that power back and take it for yourself. I love it. Okay, my last question for you as we wrap up here is the question that I ask everybody, and it is just, what either lesson have you learned that you want to share or piece of advice do you have for other creatives or about branding your passion? So either what lesson have you learned about branding your passion or what piece of advice do you want to share with other artists who are wanting to brand their passion?
The only way you will fail is if you stop. That is the one that I give like most often. because it's true. Like, eventually, statistically speaking, you know, like, you will take off. You mm-hmm. will, growth is supposed to be exponential. The more people that know about you, the more people that can tell their friends about you, then, like, you know, on and on and on. So the only way that that doesn't happen is if you quit chasing it.
Mm-hmm.
That's my big thing, is just, like, you have to keep going. You have to know that, like, it will get better.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that. And I 100% agree. Yeah. Like, no matter what happens, even if you have a shit day, a shit week, a shit month, like, there's going to be tough times. Being a business owner is hard sometimes, but
yes.
a lot of the time, often it's yeah. difficult. But yeah, as long as you keep going, you pick yourself back up, then you are still in the race and you are still going to keep, like, you're going to get one more client, one more customer, then 10 more. And then, you know, it's going to keep going. So, but that's only going to yeah. happen if you keep going. So I think that's right. incredible advice. And I love that.
Thank you.
Thank you so much yeah. for sharing. Okay. Well, thank you so much for telling us all about your story and everything that you have.
Of course, this was super fun.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you've had a great time. I have had a great time hearing from you, learning all about your story and all about all the incredible things that you have done. I'm sure everybody listening has learned so much from everything you have shared with us. So I'm going to put all of your details in the description and the show notes and everything, but do you want to tell everybody what you have going on and where they can find you?
Yes, I am on all social media at thepeachfuzz.co. My website is thepeachfuzz.co, not .com, because it's like $1,000 more expensive. and the next big thing that I have going on is my Pride launch in June. There's a lot of really good stuff coming with it, and I'm trying to get my hot little hands on the things that were pulled from this big box store to sell myself, so hopefully that can happen.
Okay, so everybody go and follow thepeachfuzz.co so that you will be the first to know when all of those things are ready to buy.
Yes.
Amazing. Okay, well, thank you, Elizabeth, and thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Brand Your Passion. If you enjoyed this one, it would mean the world to me if you could share it on social media and make sure to tag me at Maker and Moxie so that I can see and share it too. It really does help to get the show out there, which means that we can all work towards that Maker and Moxie vision of making the world a more creative place, one brand at a time. Thanks so much in advance, and I will talk to you in the next one. Until then, keep creating.